We had Michelle in from Fogasa, Michelle Duplessis, a couple of weeks ago. Good morning, Michelle. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you.
Lovely to have you back. And then in studio with me, I have a legend, and that is Mr. No other than James. And James Steyn, welcome.
Baie dankie.
James has been in this industry for a whole 30 years as a field guide and worked his way right up to the top of everything, at the as high as you can go, basically. And we are talking about the honorary award ceremony that's going to be taking place in, I think it's on the 25th of June. 16th of June, I beg your pardon, and that's going to be at Kariga. What a beautiful venue, and that is Field Guide of the Year competition. What an accolade. But before we start, we always want to know the story behind the face, and we did get an intro from Michelle, and she gave us a little bit of a background about her life. And James, we have to know. We are so curious in Hoedspruit. You know, we can't have someone walk past and not know the story. Please give us a background on what and how you landed up in Hoedspruit, but just not just that, but where you grew up, and a bit of a personal story.
Sure. I hope that Hoedspruit doesn't have the typical small town syndrome. everybody knows everyone's business, right? That's right. I was very fortunate. I grew up on a cattle farm in the Malalaan area, a smaller place called Loos Creek. In fact, Michelle also...
You won't believe it. Yeah. I also grew up in Loos Creek. Oh, yeah. I was born in Barberton, and we were actually in the same
area.
I mean, it was literally a butcher in a trading store in a farming area.
Yeah, so not much else. So as you can imagine, I was always in the bush. I was very fortunate. My parents took us to the Kruger many, many times, and we were on this farm. So I learned to ride horse, hunt, fish, do all the things that farm people do. I think my soul naturally gravitated into the bush. I was very fortunate. I never have to, or never had to think about it that much. It just happened. And when I found myself, I studied conservation, started working in Kruger National Park as a trails ranger, and then systematically got involved in Fogasa. Over the years, I think it's my 17th year now that I'm involved with Fogasa. I was different capacities, director, regional representative, and obviously assessor and a trainer, evaluator. I currently, and have for the past 20 years, run Senalala Safari Lodge in the Klasiri Private Nature Reserve.
Which I've been to, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, very nice place.
Beautiful.
I have to say. And there I just do general management. I have guides that work for me. I'm still very much involved in training field guides. And also more recently got a lot more involved in wilderness skills courses, so with the emphasis on survival and bushcraft. I did an online course and recently went to the UK to do a practical course with a global bushcraft expert. And so that's kind of the thing that I'm keeping myself busy with at the moment.
And when you say survival skills, is that for when you are out in the bush on trails or something, not just driving around a lodge environment? Sure. So it's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, that's right. It's mostly backpack trail orientated, so walking and the different skills. When you say survival, it's very broad. I mean, it's general skills that a person needs when they're doing a backpack trail, but some of those things are relevant in survival should you get yourself into a position where you have to survive.
I mean, you've heard the horror stories out there of guides just unfortunately coming upon a hippo.
Yeah.
Or, you know, buffalo. So obviously you know how you have to know how to react to that sort of thing. So
no, sure.
I can imagine that covers all of that. Well, James, and this is obviously your passion. You know, this when you're in the, I think when you're in this industry, it's a passion. It's not just a job. It's everything about you is put into this. And you know, when you were saying before, Michelle, it's that prior to where it is now, becoming a field guide used to be like, take your gap year and just go and do that, get that bush feeling out of your system, and then you go and study. And and now that it's been given the accolade that it so deserves, it also opens the road for young individuals out there to know that it's a career.
Absolutely. So it's a profession.
It's a profession. Mm. That's it. So I think it's phenomenal what you guys have done. But what we are actually here to talk about is the Field Guide of the year.
It's actually Safari Guide.
Safari Guide. Yes. I beg your pardon.
Safari Guide. And the reason why it's Safari is because, you know, it's a... And I think it's quite important for the audience to understand that we felt that Safari, well, Mike did, actually, Mike, who started, and we'll chat a bit about that later, is that it's it encompasses a holistic type of individual that can do just about anything. They meet so many requirements in terms of the skills they need, and the competition also represents that because they get tested on a variety of skills. But Safari was to put it into a Safari context, how we know it, in terms of what those guides do. And so that is why it's the name Safari, because field could be sort of any field in nature, so it's more putting it into the context of a safari environment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also I think safari broadens it internationally as well. It gives it that's the accolade, you know, you're representing and you're being acknowledged. Is it just a South African competition?
It isn't, actually. Okay. We have, it was, you know, started in South Africa, but FAGASA endorses the competition. And so we've had the opportunity of having other candidates from other African countries, because FAGASA actually stands for Southern Africa. Yeah. So we've had a couple of candidates previously that are not from South Africa. So
one of the winners, in fact.
Yeah. And it's always been our goal, and hopefully we will grow into that into the future, is to be able to extend into the rest of Africa. If we have the candidates that come into it, and who knows where it go, where it's going to go. We've got big, big dreams for it.
That's fantastic. And just a reminder of last year's winner. Where was he from?
Last year's winner was from Lodge here in Hoedspruit, in the Thorny Bush. It was the Royal Malawan, and it was Haya Esterhazen, who actually walked away with it, and the people that know Haya, he worked really, really hard his whole career to get to that point, and it was just fabulous that he got that recognition. He so deserved it.
That's fantastic, and he'll obviously be a part of this when the handover happens.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. He's a local. I mean, he grew up in Utspruit. Went to school in Palabor. His dad works at the co-op, so everybody knows Haya.
It's wonderful to hear that. Hey, it sits well in my heart. So just one or two questions that we're going to go through, and both of you are welcome to answer whichever way it flows. And what are the main goals of this year's competition?
So the main goal, I guess, not just of this year, of every year, is to, number one, recognize the level of guiding and the candidates that are, you know, that get selected. It's recognizing the best of the safari industry for this year, and that is a goal that is, you know, that is there for every year.
Yeah.
It's to recognize them, it's to spoil them, it's to engage with them, it's to ensure that there's a learning process, there's mentorship. You know, you've got guides that are exposed to other guides from other regions, and of course our judges that are part of it. Mm. So it's always been a goal of ours, number one, to recognize, number two, to connect, and number three, to give back. So I would say that those are the main. James, I don't know if you agree.
No, I just think it's important. You mentioned that you said it every year it gets recognized, and that's the thing, because surely, I mean, there's not just one good guide in the industry. Yeah. There's many good guides in the industry, and as a result of that, it's not just one person that gets to carry this forever. It's a new person every year, and I think that also helps motivate people to become part of the competition. Yeah.
Fantastic. And obviously, there is a selection criteria. You know, as much as we all want to wear the crown, we can't, and that's the reality, you know. And so in terms of what are the criteria for them to actually be selected?
In terms of the selection criteria, they are pretty straightforward. It's a certain.
And do they apply themselves, or do you?
They get nominated.
Them? Oh, they get nominated.
So
okay.
You know, it's a fantastic process, because you know there's no. It's incredible every year when you see the nominations that come forward. It's guests that could nominate the guide. It could be peers. It could be colleagues. It could be families. You know, that's how we've had the nominations in the past.
Wonderful.
The main entry requirement is the fact that they are FAGASA, that they carry a FAGASA qualification. And in this case, it's the minimum level of the field guide level with trails guide. And just going back to what we are representing. We're representing the guide that can do all of everything. Those things. Mm. And there's definitely opportunity in the future to possibly look at a different avenue, an additional avenue. Because as representing guides all over the country in nature, not all guides are walking guides in dangerous game areas. So this is something we're very aware of, and it's definitely something that the Safari Guide of the Year committee that you know obviously put everything in place are considering. Yeah. So we're very excited about the future, because there could possibly be a second category or a second event.
Or even a third category.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nice.
Because now going into the future, it's not only limited to somebody that has those qualifications. That will be obviously a very specific event, the Safari Guide of the Year, but we're very excited about what the future could be. So the entry requirement is that they have a field guide certification with us, which is the first professional designation that we currently represent, and then trails guide. That would be the minimum, and then at least 5 years experience.
Yeah, I would think at least 5 years.
Yeah, that's important. I
mean, in any sort of working field, you need that 5 years to have a base to sort of kick off.
Yeah.
And and do they have to be full-time work employees, or can they be freelance guides that are selected?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They need to be involved in the industry.
And as long as they've got that, they're registered with FGASA and they are
working. That they're current. You know, they just need to be current, because, as you know from our previous discussion, that if you are a member, you are current, you're up to date, you're maintaining your levels, you always improving yourself, and you know, and that's what we stand for. And that is the career opportunity that we've built for guides.
Going forward. Absolutely. And why is this event important for the guiding professions in South Africa and beyond?
I think it just recognizes their skill and the effort that they've put in over the years. And I think if we think back to what Mike Carantonis, who originated the competition, and I think that's what he said, is to recognize the hard work and effort that people put in. And that's purely what it is. I think it's short and sweet, literally. Yeah.
So, James, just give me a quick breakdown of how it would start for them. You come out of matric, and how do they follow that path?
Yeah, sure. Look, when I started 30 years ago, I mean, the guiding industry was a very different thing. If I think back, the internet didn't even exist back then. You know, there were no cell phones, no internet.
You're giving your age away.
Yeah. At least I don't see my face. So.
It is handsome, though, no, so you're lucky.
So it was quite interesting, but you really just, you had to become an apprentice in a way, so almost find your own way in the industry. There just weren't that many positions, and there weren't any mentors and books and courses and so on and so forth. I think today it's a very different thing. So if I have to think about how you became a guide back then and how long it took you to actually become competent at it, whatever took me 10 years could take somebody 3 years today. Whatever took me 15 could take them 7, just because there's support structures.
Yeah, all the tools are in place.
They're all in place. I mean, there's the internet, there's books, there's mentors, there's people who are willing to help you, there's a guiding fraternity and so on and so forth. So the whole thing just moves along. But you can either find your own way, hopefully stumble onto a place that will take you as an apprentice, or you could do a guide course, of which there's several companies out there today that do that, and then get a placement. And that's pretty much how you start, I think, unless you know somebody at a lodge that helps to get you in. And
but you've got to start from ground level, like everything else.
You have to. It's a unique set of skills, unlike many different. You know, and I always get a little bit, I think a little bit harder about it when somebody says to me, I want to become a guide because I like the animals. Because it's so much more than just liking the animals. I mean, you know, you realize very quickly you're actually dealing with people all the time. I mean, driving or walking and looking at animals is maybe one third of it, but hospitality is probably the most important thing. So you're also likely to be more successful if you've got a outgoing people's type personality and you're willing to communicate with guests, because that's what it's really all about. It's not just about driving around looking at little animals. Yeah. And I so often hear people say that, and it's quite unfortunate. And then I'll say on the reverse of that, I've seen also many people come into the industry with that mindset of, I'm coming to see animals. They only last 6 months. In fact, very recently I know of somebody who lasted 6 months, and they were actually quite honest. They came and said, look, I didn't think this is what this is about, you know. The guests take too much of my energy. I have nothing left at the end of the day to give to anyone. And so, no, I'm punching out, unfortunately. It's not for me.
Yeah, and that happens in all industries.
It does.
But I would think so much more in this industry because they have that perception that they are only going to be working with animals and dealing with the guests is only a small part of what they're going to do because they're staying in the lodge and the lodge is going to look after them. But yes, it's 80% of the time is spent with the field guides. Hey?
No, and also the responsibility level, you know, and going back to what Mike actually wanted to achieve is the recognition. Because if you look at the skills they need, which is linked to the categories of what they get exposed to next week. There's different categories on which they... And, I mean, we say this, you know, compete, but yes, they do compete because there's an element of competition. Yes, you know, when somebody is going in for something like this, number one, they're flippin' brave to put up their hands to be nominated. Because you're out there, you know, for the world to see. But in having said that... When you're interviewing them and you go through the all the people that have been put forward, every single one of them has wanted this in their career, and that is fabulous for us. For this time, it was very prominent in this year's group, but you know it's been on their sort of goal was to take
their
part in
list.
This, and so yes, there is that element of competition. Good. But at the end of the day, one of the other sub goals of this thing is engagement, learning, getting input from the judges, getting input from each other, because they all bring different skills to this event, and they're all going to be tested on all the different skills. And as James said, just looking and want because you like animals, it's
and
very far from
it.
That. You know, there's so much skill involved, and that is what we try and showcase and recognize, because it's very hard work getting up the levels to the top levels. It's dedication, it's grit, it's passion, it's continuous learning.
Yeah, all the time.
If I can just add to that quickly, because it's an interesting topic, but... They all think it's a competition until they arrive there and they meet the other contestants. Then they immediately gel and they start realizing that the only person they're competing against, and this is what we should all do in life, is themselves.
Yeah.
And that's the most amazing thing for all of us. We always see how they bond together, and it almost becomes a them against us, not in a bad way. They start realizing and they make they make friends and they
for
walk,
life.
For life. They walk away there and they start going to visit each other in different places, and they appreciate that somebody comes from the Eastern Cape, somebody's from Natal, somebody's from the Lower Veld, and so they see the value in that. And if I could just say one more thing quickly, I wanted to just on what we discussed prior, it's important. I'm not trying to put anybody off of guiding by saying if you don't have the personality, it's not the case, because I've seen people who don't have the personality grow into the role. So there is that opportunity. You can, if you really just take the bull by the horns, you can actually develop into a highly qualified, skilled guide. I know myself, I'm an introvert, actually, as it is, and I've had to change my personality over the years to adapt it to what's required. So it can be done. Just
of course,
to say
you know,
that.
You don't have to be a committed comedian.
No,
you know?
You don't.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's definitely a skill that you can learn and adapt to. So 100%. And how many finalists are chosen? And does it depend who's been nominated? Or how do you break it down to get to those?
Yes, so it depends on who gets nominated. So every single nominee gets interviewed. It can be
10
it could
or
be
12.
One interview, two interviews. It depends on how many apply. And then from the interviews, we then select the strong candidates. And if there's a second interview required, we do that as well. And then we pick the five that we believe are at the right level of experience and that will bring something, you know, amazing to the competition. And sadly, there's always, you know,
I
think a couple of times we've wanted to extend it. Shouldn't we have another one?
Yeah.
Or, you know, can't we make it? And unfortunately, we can't because it's just logistics.
Yeah.
You can imagine. We've got five candidates that have to compete in all the categories over a period, and that's why it takes – we're there for 6 nights.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible opportunity, you know, to showcase their skills every single day. But every single day, there's everything going on.
It's working.
So there's a whole schedule around that. Yeah. So that's how they are selected. And then, number one, they've also got to agree in advance that they're up for it, and that they, should they be selected, that they are going to accept.
Yes.
And then obviously they need the permissions from their, where they work, because they need to take off a week. And yeah, that's how we take it from there.
And how many judges are there in total, James?
And
could you just give me a little breakdown of what each judge specifically crits them for?
Yeah, we can do that. I think, Michelle, if I can just add to what you said there, I think if you don't make it, you shouldn't be discouraged. You should just maybe try again the next year.
Absolutely.
It's definitely not, you're not on the short list because you weren't good enough. It's just that we've got to pick five people and there's going to be the other 10 that didn't make it this time around. So I think that is important to mention. So there are different categories. There's a bushwalk, there's a game drive, there's a photographic component, there is bird slide and sound, bird ID, then there's a tracking component, and there's a firearms component as well. And then we've got like a general category as well. Storytelling, that's right, and a general
hosting,
hospitality professional.
Correct. So some of us, we're four or five usually. We sometimes bring in a roaming guest judge as well, and we double up on some of the things. So like I would do, for instance, the shooting and the walking, and then I share the walking with Juan, and he does the tracking. Michelle does some of the game drives, and we all do the hospitality, for instance. We all do the storytelling. So that's pretty much how it works. And I think we learned very quickly, especially in the beginning, we don't have to have too many judges. You know, the capacity anyway is not always there for venue and so on and so forth. But there's enough diversity and experience in that small group of people to get the best of what we're looking for.
And we also include some of the guests.
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
Because part of this event is to bring real scenarios into the situation. So we have guests that are guests. And some guests are sponsors, which is amazing. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to have the competition. But we also bring them in, especially on the professionalism, the hospitality, and the storytelling. So they also have a stake in scoring for those particular categories.
Fantastic. And is the event held at various venues every year?
Yes, we try and move it around. I know that's something that I brought to the table, was to try and get some diversity.
Yeah.
And also to give regions the opportunity to get exposure.
Of course.
And, you know, FOGASA is all over Southern Africa, so there's no reason why, if we are supporting this event, that we don't branch out and take it around, because what it brings to that region is incredible.
Of course.
And obviously there needs to be the synergy and the willingness of someone to sponsor this type of thing, because it's a big deal.
It is. And in total, so it's obviously the hosting the judges, the finalists, and then obviously some of the guests.
There are around 40 people every day.
It's
around 40 people every day. So, you know, the Kariha's come on board.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
To sponsor our accommodation, our meals, all of that, the ops, you know, the fuel, the vehicles, all of that. We do raise money to contribute towards that cost, because you can imagine,
of course,
having 40 people for a week. There are substantial costs involved. So that is my job, is to find that funding. It's quite a thing to put it together and get, you know, to get the right sponsorship as well.
And also, like you say, Michelle and James, how nice it would be when it travels, because I know Kariha. I mean, in the Eastern Cape, you know, it's magnificent. And it also gets that accolade and recognition. So next time, if it's in Cape Town, you know, boy, oh boy, you're going to get a finalist from Cape Town, which is,
for sure.
You know,
like
we have here in Hoedspruit,
you know, absolutely.
Go to KwaZulu-Natal, you know. So I think it's wonderful if it can go to different provinces completely.
Yeah. I think in the beginning of the competition, it was quite centralized in the Lowveld, just because of availability of venue and so on and so forth. Mm. But that's the point. We, and Michelle brought this to the table, we want to guard against making making it a low felt competition.
Yeah.
Because very easy for people to say that. And you got to understand, if you select people from all over South Africa, they're coming into biomes that they don't necessarily always know. Yeah. So now at least we're saying, no, in all fairness, we do this in all the different provinces if we can. And so that everybody's got the same skin in the game, essentially. Yeah. So that's important
and
for
also
us.
And also as guides, you need to be flexible.
Yeah.
As Absolutely. They all know, you don't only operate in one area.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have additional knowledge and skills, yeah. and it's all about the preparation, and that's what's exciting that's about the event next week is that trust me, they are all doing lots of preparation and getting finding out about the area, et cetera, which is always amazing because there's always it's amazing every year. No one ever does the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
Every year we see something different. And the guides bring something different to the table every year.
So they what's interesting is some guides have even gone as far as to go ahead to the venue a day or two beforehand and go and familiarize themselves. Absolutely. And
I mean,
for sure. And that's the kind of effort that you're looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the categories, there's a lot of them. And some people might think, yeah, there's so many and they're so challenging. But it isn't really. That's what a guide does on a daily basis, every single day.
Mm.
So you've got to be competent throughout the country, pretty much, if you want to call yourself a good safari guide. Yeah.
And what impact has the event had on the past winners, Michelle, or the finalists?
Gosh, I think James can answer that a little bit better than me because he's out there in the field. Yeah. I can add is that they definitely stand out.
Okay. Wonderful.
And sometimes they've gone to another place of work. They've stood out.
I mean, who wouldn't
so
want
it's
to
definitely
hear
given them it's given them number one credibility.
Wonderful.
So I could say that's definitely
Yeah, I think for me, I think one of the things that's prevalent is the fact that they motivate other guides.
Yeah.
And especially if they go back to the place of work, they definitely instill some confidence in some of the other candidates. Yeah. And I mean, if you take Royal Malawan, for instance, who had HJ Haier win last year, that's their third winner in 13 years.
Sure.
COVID year, we didn't have a competition, but I think it's been going for 13 years. And then if you look back historically and beyond, they've had two or three winners. I think Londolozi's had two winners. So the point being, you can see directly there that the influence that these people bring back to the places of work, and then other people are also obviously motivated to do it. Yeah.
Well, you know what? At the end of the day, what's the one message you hope people take away from Safari Guide of the Year 2025?
Gosh, I think in terms of the candidates themselves, they must just soak it up and it's for all of us. You know, we get so excited. We had a quick meeting yesterday. We couldn't believe that the time is here already.
Yeah.
It's the one time of the year. It's something that I've certainly never experienced before. It's a community that is very connected and very committed to supporting other guides.
Mm-hmm.
And just a message from, you know, to the guides is that, obviously do your best, but soak it up and just engage and connect and learn from that experience.
Be open-minded and accept.
Absolutely. Mm. And that is the one thing that I do know that they do take away. And then the secondary item to that is that they absolutely deserve to be there.
Yeah.
And that is the whole purpose, is that they deserve to be there. And we just want to recognize them and thank them for what they've put into the industry.
Fantastic. And James, from your side?
Yeah, I think something else also I'd like to mention is that the competition started really humble beginnings. It started at one of the previous director's house, the very first one.
Wow.
I mean, which is quite interesting. And that first winner is actually a guest judge this year.
Oh, fantastic.
So he's going to meet us there, which is amazing. But the thing is that the competition was always incredibly well managed. But I want to add this, not just because Michelle is here, but I really do. Since her involvement about 7 years ago, the competition has grown immensely. I mean, the venues, the quality of venues, the quality of the sponsors, the people, the logistical support that she's brought to the table has been absolutely phenomenal. And you can ask anybody in the competition. The competition has been very different since Michelle's been involved in managing the logistics right from the start. So thank you for that, Michelle.
Oh, James, it's such a pleasure.
Yeah, that's been absolutely
such a pleasure.
We always had big dreams in the beginning. We would sit there in between and say, one day the guy could win a bucky and maybe a rifle and maybe a binoculars. Well, the reality is we slowly but surely are getting there.
Mm.
And a lot of it's got to do with the efforts of Michelle. So, yeah.
Well done.
No, it's not only me. It's a team effort.
It's a team effort. And last question from my side. So, yes, what do they win?
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, there is only one overall winner. But every single category has got a prize. It ranges from cash components. So, for example, the safari experience, the game drive, that's a 10,000 rand cash prize. It's the Swarovski binoculars this year, which is valued.
Can I enter?
68,000 rand. So that's valued 68,000 rand. We've got Canon products valued at around 40,000 rand. We've got cash prizes that range from 8,000 to 10,000.
Wonderful.
So there's a whole lot of different, without leaving anybody out, our main sponsor, Ruggedwear, in terms of kitting everybody out, sponsors as well as all the apparel, which is just on another level. You can imagine everybody gets kitted out. Sure. And so thank you to Ruggedwear for that. But they also then give the first prize, which is a 30,000 rand cash prize. And then second prize is the runner-up is sponsored by WISE, which is Women in Safari Excellence. They are a organization that has been started to support women in the industry, and so they sponsor that. So
fantastic.
And what's amazing is that every year everybody manages to win something.
That's just how it works out.
It's not always the winner that wins every category. That never works. It's the one that's consistent in every category. We are very privileged to have the most incredible sponsors that are sponsoring the prizes and obviously, you know, everything else that goes with
and
it.
And just another question before we go. Are there any female finalists?
Yes, there is. There is.
Wonderful.
Someone from Hoedspruit, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, we'd like to know who they are.
Sure. It's Megan Harum-Smith.
Oh, wonderful.
And she is from the great outdoors. She's got her own company. She mainly focuses on trails guiding. And, she has worked her way up. It's an incredible story, which you will read about.
I'll definitely want to get her in here.
That's a good
Absolutely.
Idea. Absolutely.
You know, get her in and it would be amazing because she's really put everything into getting and not taking anything away from anybody else. Yeah. She just happens to be the local girl this year. But every single candidate has put in a lot of effort into
their
career.
Of course. But I would love to speak to her after this and find out from her on a personal view what the experience was like.
Yes.
And I'm hoping... I wish everyone the best of luck, but it is always nice to have a local win. So I am going to be a little biased and say I am rooting for Megan. But I just wish each and every finalist out there the absolute best and just give it your all. And but thank you so much for coming in studio, both James and Michelle, to make this, to share this for everybody that hasn't really been aware of what FAGASA does and what it stands for, but the bigger picture of what it's all about.
Yes, thank you for having us. It's such an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, great talking to you.
Absolute pleasure. And that is it. 19 minutes to 12. I've recorded this. We're going to clean it up and we'll send it out.